A full-bore earthquake erupted. The building was rocked so violently by the tremors, Ryan had to go prone to keep from being thrown to the floor. As soon as he was down, he got the rifle up again and looked back through the scope just as Christy caught the fleeing Hector with her hair.
Ryan, should we not vacate these premises before they fall down around our ears?
Hell no. Christy may need help.
But she didn't. Ryan watched in amazement as the earth split open and she pitched Hector into the fumarole. He almost fired when Felicidad came at Mildred, but then Christy disarmed her with her hair.
I say, I do believe Christy is faring fine without any help from us at all.
Mildred punched Felicidad and kicked her off the pyramid.
Good show, Dr. Wyeth. Jolly good.
He saw the Eagle Knight rise to his knees. Even before the man raised his laser arm, Ryan had the crosshairs fixed, the proper elevation and windage calculated on the fly. With something like relief that he was able to do something, Ryan squeezed off the shot. When the rifle came back down, Ryan saw the headless torso fall. He wasn't surprised. He knew it was a good shot. Then he saw his woman fall.
My word, is she hit?
No, it's the Gaia power. You know how it tears her up when it comes over her and gives her super strength. Fire blast. The way she was this time, she may be dead.
His every fiber longed to bolt down, then across the plaza and up the steps to her side. But he knew there was something he had to do first. He made himself keep looking through that scope, scanning the top of the pyramid for enemies who might harm his woman. He found two Eagle Knights showing signs of life. He put a rapid stop to that. All the rest had fled. The earth was still shaking. The skyscraper they were in trembled like a frightened child. Ryan scarcely noticed. He got up, shouldered his pack, and hefted the rifle.
Come on, Doc!
The plaza was a madhouse. The scavies were slaughtering Hector's secmen. The hapless serfs trucked in from the valley to watch their cacique crown himself emperor didn't seem to know whether to fight the scabbies, their own oppressors, or one another. The wise had already taken to their heels. For what good it would do them. The earth shocks just kept coming. The city was being shaken to pieces around them. All the time volcanic bombs were dropping into the city like glowing, hot, wag-sized hail. Ryan had expected to see JB and Jack, if he ever saw them again, already atop the pyramid. Instead, Doc called out and pointed them out, still laboring up the steps with two of the Jaguar Knights. Ryan realized they'd been delayed by having to blast their way through the frenzied, struggling mob. The path was clearer now, a good percentage of the rioters having been killed or simply run off.
A proverbial piece of cake, provided we are not knocked off our feet or smashed by a ton of airborne lava.
It was a nightmare climb. Fine, sulfur-smelling ash had begun to fall like snow. It wanted to clog the mouth and nostrils and make it even harder to pull air into lungs that already felt as if red-hot iron skewers had been thrust through them. Somehow, Ryan made it across the plaza and up the pyramid. Even more amazingly, Doc stayed with him the whole way. At the top, they found JB, Jack, and Mildred gathered around Christy. The black woman had stretched her on the altar, which had less blood on it than the pyramid top itself. A deceased Eagle Knight's plastic breastplate served to prop her head. To one side, the two Jaguar Knights crouched over Tenorio, tending his wounds. Doc collapsed into the red muck. Only the sound of his wheezing let Ryan know he was still alive. Ryan managed to stagger through the sticky blood and fall to his knees beside the sacrificial stone. He seized Christy's hand, which was limp and cold.
Christy, we're here.
She opened her eyes. Mildred had cleaned her up as best she could, which wasn't very, given all she had to work with was her hands. Christy looked as if she were a child who'd gotten naughty with the red finger paint. But it was worlds better than the way she had looked, which probably would have struck Ryan dead on the spot.
I'll be fine, lover. Now that you're here.
Christy went limp again.
What the hell?
All heads turned. A skyscraper fronting the plaza tottered. Then it fell against the building Christie's would-be rescuers had occupied with an unbelievable crash. That building in turn squealed, shook, and collapsed, sending columns of water 100 feet in the air. Ryan heaved himself to his feet. With a strength he didn't know he possessed, he scooped Christy off the altar.
We've got to get out of here now!
To where?
Only one place.
The water was knee-deep in the underground armory. Ryan had feared it would be fully flooded. It would be soon enough. The lights were on, the generator still somehow thumping away, saving them from having to navigate by Doc's purloined flashlight. Ryan splashed through the water in the lead, carrying Christy in arms that felt as though they belonged to somebody else. Next came JB and Mildred, helping a semi-conscious Doc. Jack brought up the rear with his python in hand. He had fired his Browning shotgun dry into a pack of screaming Valley Peons who had attacked them barehanded, breaking the stock over the head of the last one before the others fled. Smoke filled the air from waist level up. Ryan didn't know if the building was burning or if it was fumes from outside. Part of the ceiling had fallen in. A Bridgeport mill had toppled, crushing a bandsaw.
What a waste. What a nuke-shitting waste.
They reached the door with the warning, opened it, passed through to the door of the Matrans. Jack pushed the lever. For what seemed an eternity, nothing happened.
Oh, damn.
The door slowly began to open. The walls of the jump chamber were black armor glass, like obsidian.
Wait! I beg of you, wait!
Tenorio stood alone in the shattered workshop's far door. Jack took JB's place, helping to support Doc. The armorer gently lifted the unconscious Christy from Ryan's arms. They fell to his side like lengths of dead meat. His friends moved into the black-walled chamber. Tenorio limped forward.
You were not altogether candid with me, my friend. I thought you were evasive when pressed for details of your journey. But you seemed to be of good character and well-disposed toward us. So it did not seem hospitable to press.
We were. Well-disposed, I mean. I'm sorry. We lied.
Tenorio halted 10 feet away. The water surged and sloshed around his bare shins to the heaving of the earth. Debris kept dropping from the ceiling in chunks. The air was clogged with dust as well as smoke.
So the reports that hinted at some marvelous means of transportation, teleportation, of travel without crossing the distances intervening, were true.
Uh-huh.
We could do great things with such means at our disposal. We have much rebuilding to do, as you know.
Ryan stared at him. He didn't know whether to laugh out loud at his foolishness or to weep in admiration of his determination.
You're a man, Don Tenorio. I gotta give you that. I don't know if you're a saint or a fool, but you're a man.
That means you won't help us.
I wish I could, but it's a secret we can't afford to share.
Tenorio looked at him. The moment seemed to stretch toward infinity. The earth gave a mighty spasm beneath them. Ryan was slammed against the side of the doorway. Tenorio swayed, but kept his feet. A length of pipe 6 feet long and 6 inches thick fell behind him with a splash that drenched his back. He gave no sign of noticing.
Ryan!
You have helped us. More than we dared expect. You saved us from the Chichimecs and from Ektor's tyranny. More than that we cannot ask. We will stand on our own. Or fall on our own. That is as it should be. Farewell, my friends. Remember us.
The Baron turned and walked away.
Ryan! This place is falling around our heads!
Right, Mildred.
Ryan backed into the chamber. He watched the small, lonely figure walk away from him, head held high. The earth lurched. A segment of ceiling dropped, obscuring him from view. The one-eyed man stepped into the Matrans chamber and closed the door.
Wonder if he made it.
No way.
I think he did.
Ryan turned and looked down. Lights were pulsating in the chamber, and the mist started to form. Christy lay in the middle of the floor. Ryan knelt beside her.
We'll never know.
He lay down beside the woman and gathered her in his arms to await the transition.
Deathlands Shaking Earth is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan with Terrence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Timberly Chanel, and Thomas Penny. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Matt Webb and Brian Patton. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. Spanish translation by Maria Pino. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. If you enjoy Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.cuttingaudio.com, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, ringtones, and games. Keep listening for exciting previews.
The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Outlanders 27, Awakening. Before the nukes obliterated their own way of life, an elite team of battle-hardened American fighting men were cryogenically preserved. And now, commanded by one Gilgamesh Bates, a supreme manipulator, they are reactivated for duty. Their first mission in a tortured new world? Move in and secure Cerberus Redoubt and the MatTrans network.
I need suppressive fire on that wall!
At any cost. In a world where trust is hard won and harder kept, Kane and his fellow exiles must convince Team Phoenix that they are on the same side for humanity.
We didn't come here to fight you.
And against the willing human allies of the hybrids. Outlanders 27, Awakening. 7 unabridged hours in graphic audio. The movie in your mind.
Outlanders 27, Awakening will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting September 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy of Awakening. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Stony Man 74, The Chameleon Factor.
Well?
He stole Chameleon.
Under our noses?
Sir, he betrayed us.
And what are you going to do about that?
Chameleon, a state-of-the-art jamming technology. For a violent enemy, the power to shut down defense and communications.
You think I don't mean it? Do you really think that? Take a good look.
My God. It's like a demonstration of doomsday.
Now for Mac Bolan and his team of cybernetics and tactical commandos, it's one shot and no second chances.
Do you understand? You guys can't fail.
I know, Mr. President. That's why we're here.
Stony Man 74, The Chameleon Factor. Another movie in your mind in vivid graphic audio for mature audiences. Look for The Chameleon Factor in travel centers and truck stops starting September 2005. Or call 1-800-670-5220.
Don't waste time searching the stores for the next installment of your favorite series or stories you've missed. Call 1-800-670-5220 and order direct in CD, cassette, or MP3 CD formats. Or plug into Graphic Audio's website, where you can order it in those formats, or for accelerated gratification, download it right now for your computer or digital player. It'll be online before anywhere else. You'll also get free screensavers, ringtones, games, and other goodies. www.cuttingaudio.com and 1-800-670-5220.